Just reading these, having these words read again today reminded me of the liturgy for a funeral that, you know, that I usually use. It's right out of the little book that I use. I don't often have a crutch when I lead worship, but at funerals I like to have the little black book with me. Some of you have seen me use that. And I almost always begin with these words. Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die." There's four more words after that that I don't usually say at a funeral. Those words are, "Do you believe this?" I'm kind of glad those aren't there, because I'm not sure I would say that. I don't want to ask people that. I don't want somebody to turn that question back on me. Do I really believe that? Should I stand up at a funeral and say it if I don't? I have questions about it. I struggle with it. I mean, it's a powerful statement, right? It's a very strong statement. Anyone who lives and believes in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. That's a strange way to begin a funeral for someone who clearly has died. So what are you saying? Did this person not live and believe? Let's just start right there. There's a great funeral. Yeah, no. So, literally, no. Do I believe literally I'm never going to die? I don't think so. But do I believe that the power of life that I live in which I live and move and have my being, the power of life that gave me life, that it is this body, do I think that's going to go on? I know it is. Science tells me that, right? You've heard me say this before. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only be changed. They call it transmutation. So the energy that is me, there's no way it can be destroyed. It may not be Paul Whitmer personality, but the power that is my life will never die. I do believe that. So this had me thinking about funerals and would I want Jesus to come to my funeral? I don't know. I'd love to invite Jesus to my wedding, of course, because he's great fun at weddings. You remember that? Man, oh man, ain't he fine. He turned the water into wine. So yeah, he'd be a great wedding guest. Do I want him to show up at my funeral? Look what he did at Lazarus's funeral. He called him out of the tomb. Man, talk about how to ruin a good funeral. Call him out of the tomb. So I want to talk to you today about life. No, on second thought, let me correct that. I want to talk to you about passion. Okay, I want to talk to you about passion. On third thought, maybe what I want to talk to you about is life and passion together. A life of passion. A passionate life. That's what I want. Sorry, the preacher's confused today. Actually, it's not just that I'm confused. It's that everything is woven together so tightly, it's hard to know. This has become clear to me, and some of you are part of our Thursday morning Bible study, and you're all invited to join us, even though it was standing room only last week. We'll make room for you. It really was kind of fun. we've been exploring the last week. So it's a long, slow look at the last week of Jesus' life, which is often called the Passion, right? You remember the movie, The Passion of the Christ? It's a way of speaking about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, and looking at the last week in particular, from Palm Sunday through Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and the resurrection on Easter Sunday. And the people who wrote this book, Marcus Borg and John Dominic Crossan, they're trying to reclaim the word passion. See, that whole thing is sort of called the Passion of Christ. And so even in Christian sort of vocabulary, the Passion of the Christ immediately brings to mind suffering and death, the suffering and death of Jesus. And they're trying to reclaim that word passion in a way that I think is very helpful. And if you think about it, still is it gets us through that week, but with a different focus, sort of. And they think, well, what was Jesus passionate about? What was Jesus' passion, right? Not just the Passion of the Christ, that bloody movie and that horrible way of watching him die, okay, put that on the shelf. What was the passion of Jesus? What was Jesus passionate about? Any of you have an idea of what some of the things Jesus was passionate about? Justice. Kindness. Children. Yeah. Poor people, sick people. All of those sort of the outcasts, the less thought of, the little ones, the ones on the margin, the forgotten. Yeah. The poor and the powerless. And his passion for justice was that all of those people would not be forgotten. Another word came up in Sunday school today is mercy, kindness. These are things that Jesus was passionate about. He was passionate about confronting a system that tossed all those people aside, ignored justice, was on the take, was corrupt, drained people of their resources, and gave them nothing in return, right? Does that sound familiar? Okay, I'm not talking about Social Security. I'm talking about, although I did go to a pre-retirement seminar, so I'm a little on edge about all that stuff. But think about the systems that drain people of their resources and the church, the temple that Jesus was part of, was wrapped up in all of that. So it was part of the problem. So when we think about what Jesus was passionate about, justice and mercy and confronting the systems that ignored justice and mercy and made it hard for people to be merciful and live in justice, right? So his passion was for that. And what I think the story today shows us is that Jesus' passion animates life. It's what animated his life, right? And so you could look at his death and suffering, the passion of Christ, as a way that his life was sort of squashed by a system, but couldn't be squashed entirely. We'll get to that on Easter. And actually, we get to a little bit today, right? So Jesus has this long, in John's Gospel, and it's John chapter 11. It's almost the whole chapter, I think. There's a lot more that happens after this, actually, as I think about it. The heading, I didn't read the heading, but the very last sentence I read says, many of the Jews who saw this believed in him. The heading of that says, the Jews plan to kill Jesus. They plot to kill Jesus. So there's lots of different Jews in that. When we heard the word Jew, some of it is the regular Jews that were with Mary and Martha. But really, the ones who plotted his death were the Jewish authorities. They're the ones who were part of the system that was unjust and corrupt and was then confronting with Jesus. But what happens in this story is so interesting to me. We meet all these people. We meet Mary and Martha. We hear about them and their love for their brother. We don't really ever meet Lazarus. We see him at the very end. We hear about his sickness, and Jesus says, this sickness is not unto death. It's for the glory of God. Okay, that's not very good pastoral care, and I don't think. It's like, you know, I don't know. It could be taken like, well, just wait till you see what I do. You know, you may feel bad today, but don't worry about it. It's going to look great here in a little bit. It's not good pastoral care. So when Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem and some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him. So she leaves Bethany and goes and meets Jesus before he gets there on the road. Reminiscent a little bit of the prodigal father, right? He leaves home and he goes and he meets the prodigal son while he's still on his way. And Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. Hint, hint, wink, wink. And Jesus says, your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. I was kind of hoping we could do something a little more now. It's sooner? Yeah, do I have to wait for the last day? Jesus said to her, and that's where we get this line, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world. Is that an answer to his question? That sounds different to me. Do you believe this? Yes, I believe you. It's interesting. Just a little. I'm not going to answer your question directly. That's probably how I would have handled it in a funeral if somebody asked me, do you believe? Well, I believe that he is the Messiah. He is the Son of God, the one coming into the world. When Mary came, and this is the title, it says Jesus weeps. I think it's interesting that they give a whole, these are just words out of the version of the Bible where I printed this. See, they're not necessarily to be trusted as authority, but it's just somebody's idea of how to organize and categorize and label each paragraph or whatever. And it says Jesus weeps. And I do think a lot of energy has been paid to the idea that Jesus wept. By the way, I liked it better when the old RSV just said Jesus wept. It was two words. And it was a great Trivial Pursuit question. What's the shortest verse in the Bible? Jesus wept. Yeah. Jesus wept. Two words. You didn't have to know that it was John 11:35. I did, and I impressed my family. Da-da-da. But now it says Jesus began to weep. That's four words. Come on. Anyway, what led to Jesus weeping? Was it his great love for Lazarus? See how he loved him, they might say. Here's what I think. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said to her, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. It's as if this invitation to come and see pushed him over the edge. It was more than he could bear. Not the death, not the mourning, not the loss, but the grip that death had on all of these people. They didn't quite see through it to the life that's bigger than all of us, to passion, his passion, which animates life. I did a quick, I thought, these words sound familiar to me, come and see. Do you guys remember these words, come and see? It's in the opening chapter of John's Gospel. I'm just going to read John's Gospel here, sort of panoramic view of it. In the opening chapter, I think it's Andrew and his brother say something, Lord, where are you staying? And he says, come and see. It's an invitation. When Jesus uses these words, it's an invitation to life, to fullness, to come and see and experience the fullness of life. A couple of chapters later, he meets the woman at the well. We saw her a few weeks ago, right? She tells him everything that she had ever done, right? He calls her on who she really is. And she goes, she's known as the first evangelist, she goes and she tells the villagers, what does she say? Come and see a man who is a prophet. She says, come and see. It's the way John tells the story. It's a narrative. In chapter 9, we saw the blind man restored to sight, right? I looked through that story. These words don't actually appear there, but come on, he's a blind man. He got his sight. What's the invitation? Come and see. And actually, the very end of that interaction, Jesus does say, I have come for judgment, that those who could see would be blind and those who are blind would see. Do you hear the invitation? Come and see. Seems like there's another one. So anyway, there is that. On Easter Sunday, Mary's going to invite the disciples to come and see the risen Lord. But here we come at the story of Lazarus, who has died. And Jesus is greatly moved and troubled in spirit. what would trouble his spirit? It's like, that's like the opposite of his passion, right? He was troubled in spirit. He wasn't passionate. So what's troubling his spirit is that his passion is bumping up against the power of death. And what is it that they want to invite him to come and see? Come and see death. Come and see the grave. Come and see the tomb. Doesn't that seem backwards to you? I mean, his whole life has been about come and see life in its fullness. And in this moment, what they're inviting him to is death and its power and its grip on us. It's as if we, our invitation to the world was to come and behold our power of death. Let's say to the world, come and look at the big new shiny wall we're going to build. Or come and look at our budget that spends more than the next 26 nations, military budget that spends more than the next 26 nations combined on military, and it still isn't big enough. We need to make it bigger. Come and see the power of death that has its grip on us. It's absurd. It's disgusting. It's corrosive from the inside out, and it's what has Jesus troubled and deeply moved in spirit, right? It's that these people, his followers, his disciples, have been with him all this time, and they have not yet been animated with his passion for life. They're still in the grips of peace. Come and see. The worst invitation in the Bible. Come and look at death. Come and take a whiff. I think we did. We skip the part in there where Martha tells him, you know, Lord, it's gonna stink. He's been in there for 4 days, but come and see anyway. We want you to come and, you know, look at how wretched it is. Look at how putrid it is. Come and, you know, no wonder Jesus was disturbed in spirit and greatly moved. We have missed the point. Instead of saying, come and see a man who is a prophet, the one who has told me everything, come and see where life abounds. Come and remove your blinders and see like the blind man. Instead of the invitation to life and to be passion-filled and animated, we surrender to death. It's not Easter yet, but this falls on our journey towards Easter in John's Gospel. As a reminder that, as we used to sing in the 70s, every Sunday is Easter Sunday, and God's power for life is stronger than death. His passion, Jesus' passion, animates us even in the midst of the world that is run by and powered by what seems to be a death machine. Even in the midst of that, and especially, I think, in the midst of that, we can be animated with Jesus' passion. Thanks be to God.